is hanging in the purple sky. Baby's sleeping while its mother sighs. Talking about the rich folks. Rich folks have the same jokes, and they park in basic places. The priest is preaching from a shallow grave. He counts his money, then he paints you safe. Talking to the young folks. Young folks share the same jokes, but they meet in older places. So don't tell me about your success, nor your recipes for my happiness. Smoking bed, I never could digest. Those illusions you claim to have going.
That's one of my favorite singers. Although it was news to him that he was as popular as he is. That's Sixto Rodriguez with Rich Folks Hoax. The extremely low-key Rodriguez had no idea how popular his message music was, despite not getting, you know, a lot of airtime or on major media outlets. And he was especially stunned to learn that he, in fact, had a broad fan base and was quite the cult hero in South Africa, of all places. So it's a really great story. And it's a story that says, when you do your work, and it is not about getting notice or stardom or anything like that, many times people are really paying attention despite the fact that it doesn't look like it. But some years ago he had been invited to South Africa and played to a packed stadium. People went through so much trouble to find him. And he was so stunned to learn that he had such a following. He didn't have any clue about it. Well, we are going to follow through with our discussion today, part two of our discussion about the fallout from the Helsinki so-called summit between President Trump and President Vladimir Putin. The way we're approaching this, and the reason we're doing it this way, is just to accomplish a couple of things. One, to validate that your opinion matters, and we are training ourselves to think in a methodical way. It is not that anything is right or wrong. It is for us to just get used to the idea of thinking things through. Prevailing view is that, you know, we have to be told what to think. And we rely on the media to tell us what to think. Whether they themselves know what to think or not, the fact is that that's where we get our orientation from. By orientation, I mean our attitudes about things that are important. We rely on the media to deconstruct for us what it is we need to do for ourselves. And if we get into the habit of thinking things through, especially things that are presented to us as being of great importance and significance, all the more reason to take it easy, step back a bit, and think things through. It doesn't matter whether people think we are right, or even if we ourselves think, well, I'm right about this. You go about it from a position that you're just trying to deconstruct things, and you're trying also to take control of the most important aspect of our lives, which is, what is it that we think? People tell us what we ought to think all the time. And in a situation like this, because the summit was touted as, you know, history making, and it is, and it was so important and complicated that we dare not trust ourselves to take a position about it. We dare not allow ourselves the right and the privilege to deconstruct things and come up with an analysis that allows us to enter the fray, but very differently. By entering the fray, we talked about the fact that one of the most stunning things about this, which hasn't yet come into the public domain for discussion, is it was a racially apartheid job in terms of the who was allowed access and who was allowed to deconstruct, who was allowed to tell us what to think. It was a total, almost complete shutout, journalistically speaking, of people who we should be able to hear from, who should help us get a different idea or a different dimension of a major news story. How is that done? What was the purpose of that? And how does that seemingly unimportant matter affect what we come to know of the event and what it ought to mean to us? That's one way, one small little thing, but it's a big thing. And I bet until we discussed it, until we brought it to our attention, we did not really consider it an important aspect of what news is and what we regard as newsworthy, what we extract from any particular event that is covered by so-called major media. All right, so today, what I thought we would do is to, from your perspective, because this is an exercise in media literacy, I want to hear from you about your attitude and what you interpret as being important about this so-called summit and why you think the way you do about it. Okay? Again, it's not about being right or wrong. We just, from your own perspective, we're trying in our own way to say that this event cannot just be allowed to be the domain of a select few individuals who, as you can see, as representatives of major media, have the power to globally shape opinion. Now, to what degree does your opinion reflect the success of that or to what degree does your opinion reflect an independent way of thinking, and you therefore are extracting from an event entirely different views other than those presented, other than those that are popularly touted, and tell us how you arrived at that conclusion about this event. So we will use the summit as an experiment in that sense, of an experiment on how we maintain our intellectual independence and how we use information ourselves, that we ourselves extract from any given event, and we run it up our own very own flagpole, and we see whether it's worth saluting. Okay? So 888-874-4888. Don't be embarrassed or scared or anything like that. This is an exercise in the methodology of thinking and creating in ourselves our very own island of independence. We know what the media is saying, and that's great that they're offering all these different angles. But to what extent do you extract a different story from what it is they're telling you? How are you reading a situation in such a way that, despite the barrage of information coming your way, you still have an insight, and you can tell your insight is different from the popular view promulgated by the so-called media? Okay. So I'm looking forward to some very keen observations today. Maat starts us off today from New York. Hello, you're on the air.
I might need you to repeat the question in some respect, because I had a problem. I got through, and it could be on my end, got disconnected, and then I'm trying all these different numbers. So when you have a couple extra minutes, give us some updated phone numbers. I don't know whether some of the system has been hacked on to be able to listen. And also, I was struggling to hear the archives one day and was blanking on the numbers. So remind some of the listeners about that access too. So you want us to go further. Yesterday, you brought out something that
I just want to address the issue you raised. And the engineer informs me that they're working on the phone numbers. So thank you for that. But
okay.
That's the message I should pass along to you. All right. Did you come away with that you can tell is very different from what the major media are saying? In what instance or in what particular example can you illustrate how your view, your interpretation, is different from the media's interpretation?
Well, in the respect that I was somewhat blindsided, in that you made me, I had somehow assumed that the type of faces that I see on, you know, MSNBC and CNN, you know, where they put some sprinkles of black and brown folks, I didn't even see, when I looked so intently at that press conference, you know, I didn't really see what you brought out yesterday, and that is somehow they were able to literally whitewash it to the extent that the one brother that was there, Sam Husseini, and we have no explanation as to why he got roughed up and dragged out by these seemingly Helsinki security men, and even his report with Amy, he doesn't seem to know as to how, and they didn't like his, I guess he was about the nuclear world issue questions, and so he had made it into a little sign in case he didn't get his question in another reporter with. But the report is they were no help. They didn't speak up. They just sort of watched, you know, an older man being kind of manhandled and dragged out. So I'm,
but I want you to go, though, to the matter of, I mean, your observations about these things are worth noting. But I want to know in a concrete way, what emerged from the media as facts about the summit itself, and what allows you, what conclusion did you come to that you see is completely different from what was offered as an analysis of the summit?
Well, one thing I came away from in terms of your bigger question, I'm not sure this is exactly on what the point that you're trying to get to, but it made me more aware that the 24/7 cycle of the news around Trump, you know, it's almost sickening, you know, that I wasn't really paying too much attention to, but being more hypnotized by it. And as to the summit itself, it just seemed like something out of a reality show. It didn't make sense. It was bizarre, nonsensical, and, you know, what are we to take from this? This is a man that seems demented and, you know, some sort of psychopathy.
Okay. Thank you for getting us started today. From New Jersey, Albert, you're on the air. What in your mind convinces you that the conclusion that you've reached about any major aspect of the coverage of the summit is very different, just as, in fact, as powerful and as logical and as certain as the coverage offered?
Hi, you, Teresa. My name is Albert. Can you hear me?
Yes, Albert. Thanks for calling.
Great. Fantastic. I've listened to your program for a long time, and I'm a first-time caller, and I hope to bring an insight here. I took time yesterday to listen to some of the coverage between Putin and Trump after the conference, and I'm listening to them very carefully, spent about an hour doing it, and I was totally shocked, and let me tell you what my shock is. I also look at all these headlines, and there's this one, I don't recall the whole name, but it was some military individual named Bean, I believe, or whatever. I'm hearing things like, the guy gave away the whole store, or the country's going to war, or we're totally, you know, I mean, stuff that just, when I looked at Putin and Trump, they don't relate to one another at all. Now, maybe my observation is off, but I mean, it was very low key. I think Trump could have probably expressed things some differently. But this whole hysteria that these guys are talking—I mean, I don't. I'm trying to figure out what I heard versus what they're covering. The two don't synchronize at all, and I really had the shivers, so to speak, yesterday when I'm listening to this and I'm saying, you know, Trump is this, Trump is that, he's a blah, 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 blah. And I'm sorry, but the thing that I am, my takeaway is there's just no reality between what's being said and what's being proposed as opposed to what's really going on.
Okay, take us a little deeper because you're onto something here. Take us a little deeper.
Well, if I went deeper, and I agree with you, I was totally shocked at the lack of anything of tonality in the grouping. It all seemed like a very strange kind of group. But I was listening to Putin. By the way, I was rather impressed. The guy's nice looking, kind of, very low key. And then I heard Trump speak, and he kind of goes on with this low key. Didn't seem threatening at all, but he had a way of making statements, like when he was talking about the relations between the U.S. and Russia at an all-time low. Okay, and that was kind of like the way he just dropped like a ton of bricks. But then he comes back and says, "Well, but we're on the verge of something here." And as I said, my thing is that there is no real the reporting here that's going on versus what Trump said and versus what really is going on. I don't think the two don't have anything to do with one another. The news media is saying what they want to say based on what, because obviously the conference was held in private, so we don't know what went on really. And two, these two were giving a nice little speech outside. They didn't seem particularly hostile, but very composed, very quiet. Quite frankly, yes. Let me put it to you this way. I guess I would have to say that someplace along the line, the media wants to whip up this hysteria. It just isn't there.
Okay, Albert. I would say that's a bingo. But I wanted to get you to focus on a little bit more, because you know the story you're telling us? And it is one of the unexplored aspects of this so-called historical event. And that is, when you boil it down, you know, when you get to the nut of it,
mm-hmm.
The media are giving us all the reasons why there should be a marked line of difference between Trump and Putin.
Yes,
and yet
Putin and Trump
are more in line with each other. Now,
I couldn't agree with you more. I was privately astounded.
I've been telling us how much they should be at war and why they should be at war, and all the people that they're quoting saying that they should be at war. But Putin and Trump themselves are saying, hey, we are on the same page. Now, how do you interpret that? You hit the nail on the head here. The media is telling us there's so much friction, there ought to be so much friction, all the reasons that there ought to be friction, and they even turned on Trump because Trump and Putin come out saying that they have so much in common.
You hit it on the head. In fact, I'm almost, it brings up something to my mind. I'm an older guy, Eutrice, but it brings back to my mind that you're almost looking at what went on between Kennedy and in Russia during the so-called Cold War and the whole thing in Cuba and the missile crisis. I mean, if I didn't know better, if I didn't have to listen to these pundits, I'm seeing two guys who really are not, serial killers. But everybody else seems to think so.
The fact is that they very well may be serial killers, but the message that they are communicating, we're not making any judgment about, whether they're serial killers or not. It is just that these are the two diametrically opposed aspects of the reporting. We have it's almost universally being touted by the media that there should be, here are all the reasons that this summit is a fraud, because ideologically, there's all this enmity. There are all these reasons to find that they should both come to this meeting like boxers, wanting to do each other in. But that's not what they got. And that, in fact, was one of the seminal things that defined the coverage of the summit. The principles they were hoping to cover as combatants, right? That Trump is looking, you know, you can't trust him even in the closed room because he might put his hands around Putin's neck, and Putin might be doing something evil to Trump behind closed doors. But they were stoking, the media stoked, consistently stoked the idea of friction and why we should expect out of this meeting a great an outpouring between the two main parties of great differences, of marked enmity. But the two of them took an entirely different attitude and said, look, we're not here to fight. We have more in common than we know.
Exactly. And my takeaway with the discussion is that I know one of the scenes, which I agree with, is what are we going to do to help ourselves? And believe me, I asked myself that question every day of the week, because you had a speaker on about approximately 3 weeks ago who said something that really struck a nerve, and I don't know if this is really how far away, but it goes back to, you know, just how far we as a people, group, individual, will we go to see ourselves? She talked about and brought up what Dr. King said, made reference to it. You know, if you're not willing to stand up for anything, you know, you'll stand for anything, or really, what are you willing to die for? But I'll tell you one thing that I picked up yesterday, and my takeaway to the audience is this. You'd better darn well start listening to these people really, really critically. Because believe me, what's going on here, and I find it's astounding, between the reality of what's said and between the reality of what's going on, the two have virtually nothing to do with each other except some cooked up politics, and to use a very nasty word here, the third estate, or lack of third estate and the deep state, because I after I saw that, I was shocked. And so I know one thing I'm going to do to try to help myself is to make sure that I spend a lot of time analyzing just what it is these people are trying to tell you on the news. I've heard of fake news, but after this, from what I've heard, it's almost hard to believe that these people have a goal to get out there and actually put that stuff on media.
Well, this is a pivotal point. The media go in to cover this event with their marching orders. And their marching orders are to maintain the friction, to hype the differences, the ideological differences between Russia and the United States, and to keep that animus going. However, the two main parties here, Trump and Putin, are maintaining, and they are communicating, no, we're good. we're okay with each other. Now, of course, there's a large measure of falsehood in all of it, but everybody is committing it. You know, everybody is guilty of it. But I'm saying what you were able to discern is exactly the at the center of this whole thing.
Yes.
The media's motives and versus the principal's motives. Perfect.
Amen.
Perfect. You get the gold star.
Thank you. Thank you, Eutrice. I appreciate it, but I'm telling you one thing. I enjoy your program. Wish you the best in health. And I'm going to throw a quick thing at you. I don't know how savvy you are with computers, but I'm an architect by profession, and I use one every day. But you got hacked in a lot of things. But what I have found, this is not an advertisement. There's a particular program I can email you to that will allow you to make backups of your program once you get it straightened out. That should make it even easy for a layperson to get straightened out on being able to keep your files intact.
Thank you. I'm going to have to really pay attention to my computer issues. And a large part of it is living in Florida. You know, things kind of go wrong a lot. And it will work itself out because I'm trying to get it fixed as a priority. But you brought joy to my heart today because you landed smack dab on a central issue that nobody's talking about. They continue to tell you that it's about all the rancor and all the divisions and, you know, Trump doing this and Putin doing that. But the fact is, the principles are saying, and if it's news that you're covering, this is an angle that you cannot avoid covering. When the principles of a major event are telling you we are okay with each other, we have worked some really important things out, but you're not listening. You are on a whole different path. That's great. Thanks so much for contributing today. Randolph from Montreal, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice.
What? Hi.
I just want to... What was interesting, I thought it was the most interesting and excellent press conference I've seen or heard in a long time and seen in a long time. It looked to me like they both were trying to peacefully resolve any of their conflicts. But the answer seemed to be so negative. The very first thing I heard from the political elite is that Trump was trying to destroy democracy. And another author said that they were immediately ready to extend sanctions, really, which is an act of war. You know, Americans, you know, were yelling for months about interference by Russia in the American elections. But what they didn't mention, that the when the American ambassador presented his calling to the Russians, the very first thing he said, it was during the elections, the first thing he said, the first line of business is to meet with the opposition against Russia. Now, if that is not interference, I don't know what is. So the Americans are very, very clever. The naval military are very clever. They wanted to carry out two strokes against Russia. First, the American strategy was to cut off the gas supplies to Europe that passed through the Ukraine. And secondly, a strategic military naval base in the Crimea, they attempted to deny the Russians access to that naval base in which they had. So how can you blame the Russians, because the Russians decided to counter the strategy, then the Russians are very evil. But they don't
this
look
is
at
a,
it.
This is a thing. What you are communicating, these are all aspects that must be reported you know, in the course of covering this. Nobody here is an innocent. Nobody. You're quite correct. Putin is not automatically to be trusted. And we have Donald Trump, who is completely outmatched. You know,
why don't you
the anxiety people have about Donald Trump going or presuming to go head to head in any negotiation process with Vladimir Putin. He is not equipped to carry that burden. But in the end, we have to say he's the president of the United States. He's what we've got. Putin is what we've got to deal with. If the president and Putin agree that they should go into, you know, a special session, close doors, and talk man to man. We don't know what they did, but we know what the fright is. And it is an unexpressed fright, because the people behind Trump, let's say, they know very well what the reality is. He is a loose cannon. He is a very his intellectual capacity is very thin. He in no way could outwit or outmatch the likes of Vladimir Putin in the room. That's an aspect of the coverage that we did not appreciate. We did not get to appreciate the fear on the part of the United States people behind Trump about just the very act of sitting down separate and outside the reach, the direct reach of anybody, and Trump is in a room alone with Vladimir Putin, and presuming himself that he could carry this ball. He's not prepared. And that was, and still is, a very major concern. At the same time, they could do nothing about the president's autocratic decision to say, I am going to meet alone with Vladimir Putin. I mean, they know what the truth is. They know what the truth is about Trump. And their fears, in a way, were realized when they both came out of the room. And as Albert from New Jersey told us, they struck a deal that may or may not have any basis of logic or fact, because Trump was the weaker party in that room, and nobody else was there to run interference and say, no, don't do that. But they had been covering up for Trump for so long since he came into office. They know his propensities. They know he is, in many cases, a weak president, and he proved it.
But listen, Trump has some of the best advisors, most right-wing advisors in the nation. They brought several people with them. It's not
right,
just
but they weren't
Trump
in the
himself.
Room.
It's not just Trump
they weren't
himself.
In the room. Trump is not listening. Trump is not listening to his advisors. This is all the information that we should appreciate. If we got good and competent coverage, we will get an appreciation of the complexities of this meeting. It didn't have anything to do with the subject at hand so much as it had to do with the terror on the part of Trump's advisors that he was alone without any backup in a room with Vladimir Putin. And despite all the talk, Trump talk, the indications were clear. He yielded to Vladimir Putin, or in other words, Vladimir Putin was by far a superior presence in the room, got everything he wanted.
But you see, you need new people's thinking.
You don't need new people's thinking as much as you need a president who understands how to be a president. As a newbie, you're a new guy to this, you don't read any books. You're not intellectually prepared. Here, and you're going into a room ostensibly to negotiate. Your definition of negotiation doesn't come anywhere close to what Vladimir Putin understands by negotiation.
Why don't you give Putin credit for not being a liar? That maybe he's telling the truth, and maybe he's proved in his own country.
You put Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump in a room. Okay, you put me and Donald Trump in a room, and I'll do better than Donald Trump. You put practically anybody in a room with Donald Trump, and they have a better than average chance of prevailing. Because the president, bottom line, is not prepared. He's not prepared.
I think he is. I think he's far more clever than people give him.
He's been running a hustle for years, and he has not changed that central idea. You can't hustle everybody. You can't perpetuate a fraud. You're just not equipped at that level to do business. Now, he could be president in the sense that he might inspire his advisors to be even more aggressive and more astute. But he went in there without his advisors. He probably didn't think much of their advice in the first place because he can do all things so well. He is perfect at everything he does. And he hasn't done anything yet that hasn't been a spectacular success. So he goes into this room psychologically. He has basically went into this room with significant, I would say, disabilities.
Yeah. The man runs an enormous...
The guy was a head of operations, intelligence operations. He has come through the muck and mire of Russian politics. He has a reputation of being ruthless. He, you know, is very charming and very low key. But make no mistake, there's no way you can put Trump up against a Vladimir Putin one-on-one with the expectation that Trump will come out with any significant victories. The man, in fact, right in that room, was turned around. He started badgering and battering his own intelligence agencies. I mean, it was a disaster. But the thing was that in covering this event, the reporters did not do a proper analysis to say that Trump, there was great fear about this. Not that it shouldn't have happened, but that Trump was completely ill-prepared to undertake anything approximating a summit meeting one-on-one with the likes of Vladimir Putin. He was outmatched. And then there is the matter of whether Donald Trump went in there impaired. And when I say impaired, I'm talking about his own the suspected disabilities the mental disabilities that he might have walked in there with. So the story hasn't been told. It's been told from the point of view of recovering a summit. No, you're not covering a summit. You're covering two very different kind of people with very different kinds of histories, representing two very powerful countries. And one of them cannot sustain to any successful degree any kind of negotiation at that level. He just can't do it. And yet he was allowed to do it, because the same media that is bashing him now is the same media that has refused to deal with the question of Donald Trump's deficiencies. So here it is. It cannot be denied anymore. He's embarrassed his nation by essentially allowing Vladimir Putin to twist and turn him like a pretzel. And that's what's missing. This kind of comprehensive discussion. Thank you so much for your call, Randolph. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Yatrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope all is well. You know, I have not really paid very much attention to the coverage, because there's an old Caribbean saying that says, see my company, see me. And, of course, in the U.S., as you're known by the company you keep. I think we are all in accord that not only is Ehun Red not only is he unread and uninformed, he is unintelligent. And so people, the press and the American public thought that he was going to put Putin in his place. I mean, America is the greatest superpower in the world. How can he go as the representative of the greatest superpower in the world and go and be embarrassed on the public stage? He's supposed to put Putin in his place. And of course, as we know, because he is unenlightened and uninformed, he doesn't possess the intellectual prowess and skill in terms of negotiation that Putin does. But what the two of them have in common is that they're two of a kind. They are dealing with both of their agendas, and they are in accord with that. So, you know, I'm listening to all of this now, but I'm saying, what intelligent individual thought that there was going to be a different outcome? It escapes me.
The major media apparently had such hopes. And the coverage up until the actual sit-down was exactly what you said. It reflected the hopes and dreams and aspirations that, you know, Donald Trump will be representing America the way, you know, some of the fabled presidents have. He's not of that ilk. He does not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they expected him to go there and bully Putin like he bullies everybody else here and around the world. He's not at Putin's caliber. What made them think he was?
Well, the media.
Donald Trump told them who he was.
Donald Trump has been telling them who he was, and they've been covering him based on what he tells them, not based on any independent analysis. They've been sycophantic. They parrot everything he says about himself, and he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But now, when the time comes to demonstrate your superior skills, it ain't happening.
He told us, didn't he tell us in January that he is a stable genius?
Yes.
Okay, then. Enough said.
And recently, too. Recently, he reiterated that he is a stable genius.
Yes. As they say in the Caribbean, enough said.
So you see how we are discovering how media can actually shape things to make the real unreal and to make the unreal real. You would never have thought, based on special information that the media should have had or should have been operating with in terms of Donald Trump, you would never have expected that the media, at least the media, would never have expected that it would go so badly. And yet they know all they need to know to have strong concerns about Donald Trump, a Donald Trump-Vladimir Putin meeting. It's amazing. And yet, in their coverage, they're very, very, they're very knowledgeable. They're very close to the facts. And how come they didn't see this coming? Why didn't they tell us something that would prepare us as the public for a disappointment of great magnitude? They know what's going on. But now, there's no denying that there's reason to be concerned about Donald Trump's leadership and about his capacity to lead. So let's see how they continue, quote, coverage, unquote, of Donald Trump without getting close to that subject. Thanks. Go ahead. Finish up. Okay. We're getting some interference there on the line. Henry from Chicago, you have about 2 minutes perhaps to quickly say what you have to say. Oh, no, don't. So I'm hearing the music, which means that we have to go. Thank you so much. You see how much we get when we actually disassemble things. And then you get an entirely different reading of what they tell you. Is a very straightforward bit of coverage about a very straightforward issue. We'll continue this tomorrow because we've got to talk this through. And you see how absolutely informed you are and why you should trust yourself. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll join each other tomorrow and continue the conversation then.
Talking to the young folks share the same jokes, but they